greetings. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to the Steve Day Show, live and on demand right here on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast with Todd Erzin and Aaron McIntyre. I am Steve Dace. It is good to be with you. Brought to you by our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company, the Patriots' preferred coffee. And again, we don't back them just because they share our values. We back them first and foremost because they make great coffee. Do an excellent product first. Then the fact that you have your head screwed on straight is just adds to the, it's a value added at that point. And that describes our friends at First Cup Coffee Company with a flavor for every freedom loving American. They put the roast date right there on each bag. So you're going to see that it was shipped to you within days of being roasted. You can get 10% off right now. If you use my last name, Dace, as your promo code at firstcup.com, promo code Dace. And if you subscribe, you save an additional 10% for the life of the subscription at firstcup.com, promo code Dace. That's firstcup.com, promo code Dace. Of course, we're going to be talking a lot about the ongoing border battle. All kinds of news broke yesterday after we got off the air. I went from blackpilled to is this divine favor to what in the Sam Hill is this? I mean, yesterday was, I think, just a book of judges kind of day. We start off with everyone does what is right in his own eyes. Then there's a Gideon or Samson moment. And then we're right back to the dog returning to its own vomit. That's a pretty good description of how yesterday went on this issue.
Nailed it.
And then there's going to be a hearing today in the First Fifth Circuit Court. I'm going to have a lot to say on this because I know Aaron will highlight the news that broke in a moment in his montage. But it's also a good segue as a reminder about our series we have right now on Blaze TV for subscribers about Texas versus the feds and what's going on there with the border crisis. And you're gonna see if you subscribe and get to watch this that there are moments when the Biden administration has moved to stop invasions. And so they're not unaware. It's not, you know, feeble-minded, absent-minded professor, you know, bungling, just, you know, tripping over, you know, his own phallus in the dark. Although, let's face it, we see plenty of that. No, they are aware of what is happening. And there have been moments where they have stepped in to stop more. So then why haven't they done that more often? They get into that and more with this special. You don't want to miss it. Go to blazeoriginals.com. Use the code BORDERCRISIS to get $30 off your Blaze TV subscription. Blazeoriginals.com, promo code BORDERCRISIS is where you want to go for that. Of course, it is a Wednesday. We'll have typical Wednesday fare. We'll have buy, sell, or hold later in the program. Daniel Horowitz will be joining us as well. I got to continue to say thank you. I mean, the success of just this little book over here has been incredible, particularly because it's had very little external marketing. So this has all come from you all. And I'm just very, very thankful. And I've heard from several of you. Who's about how your kids love the book. Our colleague Sarah Gonzalez sent me a text this morning that her three-year-old loved it and is now requesting additional readings. So that's the whole point of this project was to bring back the lost Christian heritage of America, starting with the future generation. So if you have yet to get your copy, Why Easter? Jesus died for us so we can live forever. Why Easter? Jesus died for us so we can live forever. Available now everywhere, but my publisher would really love it if you bought it at Amazon. And then you can get, I still think they haven't given me an update, but I still think there's at least a few signed copies available at signedyeaster.com, including custom autographs if you want one of those, signedyeaster.com. And we love reviews. We're getting a ton of them this week, so please keep it going. And I'm just very, very humbled by how you guys have acted on this, basically just completely on your own and made it a tremendous success. So thank you guys very much. And of course, it's only the most important message in the history of the universe. So it's good to see that it can still find an audience without whatever that clip we had from Elevation Church was yesterday. It's amazing. You know, I mean, Elevation Church tells us we can't bring anybody in, Todd. unless we just get rid of basically every theological, problematic, troublesome theological point that would maybe even convict people of their sin. We couldn't possibly bring him in. And yet, we're finding a way. We're not pulling any punches here, right?
No.
Yeah, we're finding a way. We're bringing the old-time religion here. And we're doing it on a for-profit platform. I'm going to do, what is it? We have 9 live reads today, Aaron. That's the most we could possibly have. We're sold out. And I'm doing narrow road messaging on a broadcasting platform. So, no, I don't want to hear from your pastor. I have no sympathy. None. Negative integer sympathy. None. I don't want to hear people won't come. Well, they're coming here. And I'm not protected by any nonprofit status. I mean, our overlords at the Blaze, Tyler and Gaston, I mean, they are slave drivers. I mean, every day it's a text. Rent, rent, rent. I mean, that's why we're here.
I'm imagining them back. Hey! Yeah,
I resemble that remark. No, but in all seriousness, they're not that overbearing. But ultimately, we are a for-profit venture. You guys get what I'm saying here. I'm embellishing, of course, a little bit. But we're a for-profit venture. So if we can make a profit off of narrow road messaging in a broadcasting platform, I don't want to hear from your pastor that they can't fill the seats in his massive campus that he went way too far into debt probably for to pay and to get. I don't want to hear that it can't happen without literally stripping the gospel of all of its potency. Fair?
Fair.
I mean, I'm not asking anything I'm not doing. Right?
Right.
I'm not asking your pastor to do anything we're not doing here. If we can do it here in a for-profit venture and draw a much larger crowd than even your mega church pastor can get on a Sunday and all his services combined, then so can he. Kind of like what we just said about the Biden administration. So it's not that they can't do the job. They know what the job is. It's that they won't. So, I mean, I got a best-selling book here for kids telling them they're sinners and they're going to spend forever apart from God if they don't repent. That's in the book, is it? We read it out loud to you.
It's in the book.
It's in the book. I read this book to kindergartners in small town Iowa back on Monday afternoon. So, I mean, they seem to get it. You just don't want to give it. Don't let your pastor get away with it. He knows better. And if he doesn't, get a new pastor. And with that, here's Aaron's rundown of what happened while we were away.
What happened while we were away, brought to you by Getting Jerked Around. Here's the timeline of events. On Monday, the Supreme Court indefinitely extended a stay on SB 4. That's Texas's new law, which allows them to arrest illegals. It's mired in legal purgatory at the moment. Bad news. Tuesday, the Supreme Court did a stunning 180 and, in a 6-3 decision, decided to allow Texas's law to take effect as the legal battle continues in lower courts. Great news. Then, while we were sleeping Tuesday night, a 3-judge panel on the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled 2-1 to put back into place that stay on the Texas law, so we're back at square one, where we were last week.
When I said that I wanted to have kids and you said that you wanted me to have a vasectomy, what did I do? When you said that you might want to have kids and I wasn't so sure, who had the vasectomy reversed? And then when you said you definitely didn't want to have kids, who had it reversed back? Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap.
Meanwhile, in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis tells Dana Loesch DeSantis Airways might be back and coming to a New England island soon.
The problem when you get to a situation like Florida is if they have people in our state and we wanted to fly them, say, back to Haiti, you have to get clearance to be able to do that. If you wanted to fly somebody to a South American country, wherever they're from, it becomes a little bit more difficult because the federal government's going to tell the host countries not to accept our plane. So we've gone through these iterations. What could we do as states? I definitely think we can help put them back over the border if they come across in Texas or Arizona. And so I'd be willing to help do that. I think that the states really have no other choice to do that at that point. It's a little bit different for a maritime state like us. That's why we really have to get them before they reach the shores. And that's why we're working so hard to do that.
Yeah.
Although I will say this, we do have our transport program also that's going to be operational. So Haitians land in the Florida Keys. Their next stop very well may be Martha's Vineyard.
For some reason, we're relitigating the Brett Kavanaugh, Christine Blasey Ford fiasco from 2018. The latter, Blasey Ford, has a memoir out, and she was interviewed on The View this week.
Well, you've been called a highly credible witness, and you have a PhD in psychology. You're a professor. You teach at Palo Alto and Stanford universities. But even today, some people remain skeptical of your story. And you write that during the hearing, Senator Lindsey Graham wouldn't even make eye contact with you.
Learning Chinese today, today's phrase is, there's more than one reason Lindsey Graham doesn't make eye contact with women.
林塞格雷厄姆不与女性进行目光接触的原因不止一。
Anyway, continuing on with the Christine Blasey Ford clip.
Were you prepared for that kind of response?
I was prepared ahead of time that that none of the Republicans were going to speak with me, and they were going to use an outside interviewer. And so I was actually surprised at how kind some of the other Republican senators were who broke that protocol and said hello.
Who was that? Can you name a good one?
Senator Flake and Senator Sass both came over and said hello.
Neither one's in Congress anymore, right? Yeah.
But still, a credit.
Yeah,
good for them.
As Molly Hemingway at The Federalist reminded everyone yesterday, there are at least 20 reasons to refute the claim that Christine Blasey Ford is and was a credible witness, including the fact that, you know, there's absolutely no evidence the woman actually ever met now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Pope Francis, in newly released excerpts from his personal memoirs, reflected on the era of COVID and the COVID jab, saying, quote, deciding whether to get vaccinated is always an ethical choice, but I know that many people signed up to movements opposed to the administration of the medication. This distressed me because, in my view, being against the antidote is an almost suicidal act of denial, end quote. Dispatches from New York City. Here's ABC 7 TV.
Here, this guy just forced himself into my house.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
And so did you.
Ma'am.
You broke through the front door.
Officer.
The man called the police on her.
So why is it that I have to leave and he doesn't have to leave?
Because technically he can't be kicked out. You need to go to court.
They consider this a landlord-tenant issue. And by law, it has to be handled through the housing court, not with police.
If you own this house, you would not want
I
her inside.
Own the house. I don't own this house.
Exactly.
Yes.
She does.
Yes, but then once again, you should know how the law works.
I do know how it works.
There's rules to the as you got to go to court and send me to civil court.
He says he signed a lease in October, but wouldn't tell us with who.
I got proof longer than that.
Show us the proof.
But who are you for me to show? I showed it to cops.
Dan with Channel 7 News. If you don't want to show it, you don't want to show it.
Cool. Come here, brother. I like that.
I would like to see it.
He didn't show me a lease.
This is a bill.
A bill for work he says he had done to the house. He didn't show police a lease either.
The police department doesn't have the lease?
No.
He's got no documentation.
Just bills.
So, Adele, you're getting arrested right now?
I'm being arrested.
For what?
For being in my own home.
And where's your lease?
She's fighting the house. It's not her house anymore.
My deed is current and legal.
Arrested for unlawful eviction. She changed the locks on a man who claims he lives there.
And finally, a palate cleanser. Here's Oklahoma Superintendent of Public Instruction Ryan Walters getting set to read a storybook to young school children at a public school in the Sooner State.
Very good. Hey, look, I love that you guys are paying attention, guys. I appreciate you guys so much. I'm so excited to read with you guys today, so thank you for letting me be here. Before we do that, I'm just going to say a quick prayer real fast. Dear God, thank you for these wonderful students, and thank you for letting us be here today. God, I want you to please be with the state of Israel, our country, our nation, our state, and our schools. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with these wonderful students today. Amen.
Prayer in public schools. That's what the communist is up in arms about? Yep. And that's what happened while we were away.
I coached him to do that. I even scripted the prayer. None of that's true, but that'll be in the newsletter. That'll be in the Media Matters newsletter this weekend, do you think? I'll get a Google alert on that. Ryan Walters reads Steve Dasho's scripted prayer to Oklahoma school children. At least I hope it's in there.
You got a shot.
I hope it's in there. Aaron's Montage brought to you by our friends over at Hillsdale College. You want to check out their new, we told you they've been offered, they've got a series of great free online courses to help you be a better American. And one of them you definitely want to check out is the new one from historian Victor Davis Hanson. I know a lot of you have followed his work and appreciated. He's got a pretty successful podcast on his own. And he's teaching a course about American citizenship and its decline. It talks about Open borders, identity politics, the administrative state, globalization, and more have completely warped our understanding and reverence for citizenship and the impact that is having on our country as a whole. You don't want to miss it. You can sign up for free. The course is free. It's called American Citizenship and Its Decline, just one of the free courses that they offer at Hillsdale. When you go for when you go to daceforhillsdale.com, that's daceforhillsdale.com. Christine Blasey Ford, were you surprised that you couldn't establish, even via hearsay, that that any of your claims were true, or that you and Brett Kavanaugh even knew each other, and people amazingly just don't believe you? Christine Blasey Ford, are you surprised that after this obviously harrowing thing that supposedly happened to you, and how emotional it was to recount the event with no evidence or whatsoever presented that backed up your claims, that then you show up here on national TV with about a $60,000 total complete makeover and look like a different human being than you did the last time we saw you, and that may make people suspicious about why they don't believe any of your claims? Those questions get asked?
Can you shoot me? Really? Which issue should I not be blackpilled on after that montage, Steve?
I thought you were a children's book author. I looked over when Aaron had that riff of the Pope going off on anti-vaxxers. I looked over at you, and you were like that meme that on Twitter where the guy's just sitting there nodding his head, okay, playing Russian roulette solo by himself on the couch. My heart hurt for you on that one, brother. It hurt for you on that one. It did. So,
what a world.
All right. What's happening here now at the border and the process that this is finding itself engulfed in? This is, in many respects, in a nutshell, what's happened to this country in the last generation on a political level. There's always the spiritual origin for everything, and that's why we focus so much on and that's our prime directive on this show, is a biblical worldview. Okay? But when a culture loses its spiritual plumb line, what are the fundamentals that get altered that indicate this? You know, Jesus says, you know a tree by its fruit. He's not just talking about looking for good fruit there, is he? You can see bad fruit on a tree, mm-hmm. too. Okay? So this whole story is bad fruit on a tree. How did that? Which means someone had to plant this seed, right?
Yes.
I want us to discuss how this seed got planted. Because what is happening right now is, this is all about process. This is all about jurisdictions and briefs and rulings and everything else. And I'm not saying those things are not important. When a process is put into place to ensure righteousness is fulfilled, that process should be followed. Even at times, if you risk not getting the outcome you always want, right? Because that process, if followed over time, will more times than not generate the right outcome because of what the process is based on, right?
Yeah.
But what if the basis for the process is abandoned and now all that is left is a process?
What if? Just spitballing here, of course.
That's exactly where we are right now. And you can tell that the process is complete BS by how it is working itself out right now in real time. So let me start there. Okay. There is, when our country was founded, it was founded by a mixture of enlightenment and biblical understandings of the world, particularly the law. And when you see phrases like laws of nature and nature's God, and inalienable rights, these are very specific references to things that were understood at this point in time in human history, the mid to late 18th century. This was common parlance. Like, they're not, this isn't a turn of a phrase. Okay, they're not trying to show, hey, look how smart we are. Right? This is the vernacular. In the philosophical political circles, this was the terminology that was used. Okay? So they're talking shop, basically. And they're making very specific references to what is the largest common understanding of the law in that era. And it starts with, there's a creator. He revealed a generic moral code via the Ten Commandments. And that as much as human beings are capable of, they should strive to align their code with that one, because it's the best one humanity's had revealed to it yet. And they all pretty much agreed with this, even those who questioned the miracles of the gospel, like Jefferson, even those who were very devout in their faith, like a Washington, a Benjamin Rush, a Patrick Henry, even those who at times were hostile to faith, like a Thomas Paine, even those at times who would verbalize, you know, a reverence for faith, but lived lasciviously, like a Benjamin Franklin, at least lasciviously by his time. By our time, it would just be Tuesday, okay? But this was the uniformed code that they went by. The process of law that they gave us was in order to honor what they thought was the origin and the substance of the law, its purpose. The origin of something and the substance by which it's made up with tells you really what its purpose is. If we are from apes and we're nothing more than an upright vat of chemicals randomly evolved over time, what's our purpose? There isn't one. If we are made in the likeness and image of God, and we are body, soul, mind, and spirit, well, then that clearly denotes there's some purpose to our existence, correct?
It's eternity.
Exactly. So the origin of something and the substance of something tells you what the purpose of that thing is. And sometimes they referred to this as common grace. Sometimes they referred to it as general revelation. Natural law, going back to Thomas Aquinas. What's that? 13th century, probably. Okay. They would have gone back to Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England. So it was a common law. All right. Blackstone, by the way, in those law books that they all studied, quotes from Aquinas himself when he says and from going all the way back really to Augustine, any man-made code that contradicts that divine law or natural law should be tossed out. It's no law at all. Should not be followed. Post-evolution, a new theory of law developed. Out of Malthusian ethics, utilitarian ethics. It's been given a lot of names. We'll refer to it here as legal positivism. And that essentially the law is now based on whatever the recognized human authority at that time says it's based on. And the idea of following precedent, which, I mean, if you believe in natural law, the ultimate precedent is the Ten Commandments, the first law, right? So I'm all for following precedent. I'm not against following precedent. I just want to make sure are we actually following precedent? What's the precedent of the first law, right? Let's start there and let's follow precedent. This developed a doctrine that became known as stare decisis. And that essentially, whatever, and they won't teach you this in a law school, but what it really means now is whatever is conjured up through the depraved mind of any pagan judge now gets to be the law, because he declared himself the lawgiver and lawmaker, and courts determine their own jurisdiction. They do teach you that in law school. And this is all very important to understand why we are where we are with this. And it's important for you to understand now that we tried to play by their system for decades. We said, okay, stare decisis then. Whatever the last judge says is the law, then we'll get our guys elected and we'll appoint our justices. And so we spent a generation, Todd, voting Republican for good what?
Judges.
For better what?
Judges.
All right. And it was because, okay, we're going to play your game. These are the rules. Okay, fine. We'll put our judges in there. So yesterday, after we got off the air, in one of the most stunning things I've seen in my time being politically aware, I've never seen. I mean, I was just explaining on the show at this time yesterday, typically if the court will not allow something to be enforced, I'm not saying it never happens, man, but it's pretty rare that it will turn around and then uphold the thing it didn't want enforced while it was considering it. Well, about 20 minutes after we got off the air yesterday, that is exactly what happened. One day after it told Texas it cannot enforce its law, the court turned around by a vote, 6-3 or 7-2, and said, yes, you can. Now, if we were actually practicing stare decisis, what is the superior court in the country? The Supreme Court. That's why it's called the what? Supreme Court. Now, I know we don't know what a woman is. We don't know what a border is. So we probably don't know what supreme means. Okay. But supreme means, now stick with me here. If you look it up in the original Greek, Latin, and Pig Latin, and hieroglyphic, supreme means supreme. That's what it means. It means supreme. If we were actually following stare decisis, then a lower court would have said, well, I get the superior court wants this thing enforced while it's adjudicated. I guess we'll follow that lead, right? But about 9 o'clock last night, is that what the 5th U.S. Circuit Court, which is subservient to the U.S. Supreme Court, is that what it decided it was going to do?
No.
Follow stare decisis? No. Because the disagreement here, and we're going to carry this conversation in the next segment, but you need to understand this, and you need to go back, and you're going to listen to these two segments back-to-back together again. It's important. You're being told that the argument is over legal process. It's not. We followed their legal process. We played by their rules. Okay, judges make law, then we'll get our own judges in there and have them make law. All right, stare decisis is now the law, not the laws of nature and nature's God, so whatever is the last precedent. Okay, if those are we'll get our own Fed Sox society together, we'll appoint our own judges, we'll play that game. So we did yesterday, and we actually won, which blew my mind and made me think, wow, this is like divine favor. 8 hours later, a subservient court said, we don't need no stick in stare decisis, and put an injunction on the law anyway, in clear defiance of their superiors. No. The first point you must understand is that we are not having a battle of legal process. This is a battle of what is actually law. Not even the law. Like, what do we think of the Texas statute in particular, but law as a construct? What is it? What's its origin and what's its intent? What's the substance of it? Because when you strip away all the Latin terms and you strip away all the process, here is what's being debated. It's insanity. It's like that clip of the woman you just saw in the montage.
Yes.
Kicked out of her own home.
Exactly.
If your law leads to the, if your legal process leads to the woman who owns the home is the criminal and not the guy who's invaded her home, your law process is unlawful. It is lawless and should not be followed. Likewise, if your legal process leads to the conclusion that you have no agency to whatsoever to stop an unlawful invasion of criminal aliens who do not have agency in your country, that is not law. That's immoral. It's evil. It's wicked. It should not be followed. No process should uphold it. And any process that does has disqualified it. Now we're back to the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events a government gets to this point, we dissolve ties. We don't follow that. So part one of this conversation, it's important to understand this is not a debate about the legal process or even the Texas law in particular. This is a debate about law in and of itself. What is it? Where does it come from? What's the purpose of it? We'll pick up the conversation here from there in a moment.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
Financial experts thought we were in the clear. They were anticipating about a half dozen Fed rate cuts this year. Well, we're at the end of March. Better get going. Right? It's only 9 months left. So we need one of those to get started here pretty quick. Then the inflation data came out. Yeah, not so much. Higher than expected again. The U.S. $34 trillion in the hole, and yet we keep printing money. We keep printing money, which just drives that inflation even higher. So we can either bury our head in the sand or do something about it. One thing you can do about it is diversify a portion of your portfolio into gold with Birch Gold Group. Use gold as your hedge against inflation. Gold, Birch Gold makes it easy to own gold. They'll help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and you won't have to pay a penny out of pocket. So just text Steve to 989-898 and get your free info kit on gold. Text Steve to 989-898 and get your free info kit on gold today by texting Steve to 989-898. All right, so let's reset things. This isn't an argument about the process, the legal process, or even the legal arguments. And we're not even following the process of stare decisis now because we played their game. Via Trump, we ended up getting a majority of GOP-elected justices, right? Mm-hmm. They sided in our favor after we got off the air yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. The majority of the court did. The majority of the court said Texas can enforce this law. That those things occurred, right? And then a subservient court about 8 hours later said, we don't want it enforced. If we were following stare decisis, at the very least, they would have recognized, even if the Supreme Court said, we'll let it be adjudicated in the lower courts, they would have at least, which they did, they would have recognized that the Supreme Court at least has some merit in its opinion of letting the law be enforced. But they ignored it. They ignored it completely and did their own thing instead. Which just goes to show you, this was never going to win in the end. All right, for every Roe v. Wade we got overturned, we've lost using this process like 50 other times. Why? Because we weren't having a process argument. They came up with this process to do what they've always wanted to do, which I'm going to talk about now. Undo the law. The point of stare decisis and precedent is binding no matter what it's based on was never, ever simply and merely a rival political or rival theory of legal process. It was always and from the beginning a process to introduce a rival source of law. That's why it came out of the evolutionary movement in the late 19th century. That's why it came out of the progressive movement in the late 19th, early 20th century. This wasn't a bunch of eggheads got together at Harvard and just were debating which Latin process was the most meticulous and efficient for the carrying out of the law. No, this process was created by those whose intent was to introduce a different, a rival, a competing, new understanding of the substance and therefore an origin and therefore purpose of the law. That is key to understand. That's why we were never going to win this way. Because if we finally built a critical mass of judges, and after the Trump era, we did. We had a few circuit courts that we completely flipped over under Trump. We got a, but by the time Trump was done, we've got three new judges. There's a majority of GOP appointed justices, and they've been disappointments a bunch of times, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But they also signed off on one of the biggest precedent overturners in Supreme Court history when they overturned Roe v. Wade. They did that too, right?
Yes.
Okay, so once we got the advantage on their system, what did their system do? Did it recognize yesterday? Did the Fifth Circuit Court say, well, you know, we're going to have a hearing. We don't think this is the law, but the Supreme Court will, you know, we'll go with what the Supreme Court said out of deference to them. Decorum, of course, you know, normalcy and decorum. Did they do that?
Of course not.
They did not! Because this was never about the process of law. This was about the law. Not even this law, the law. You guys have heard me cite this many times. I'm going to cite it again. There is a reason why the Pharisees are who's usually arguing with Jesus in the Gospels. Because in Jewish history, they're the good guys. They actually cared about the faith. They cared about the word. They preserved it. They passed it on. They built the traditions in the synagogues. They counted Ezra as one of their founders in their legacy. So when this guy shows up doing these mysterious things and saying these profound words, yeah, they're actually curious. They're skeptical, most of them, but they're actually trying to engage. Doesn't spend much time arguing with Sadducees. They don't care. They're like the Democrats of the first century. They're largely tuned out of spiritual matters. They're only concerned about earthly things. And in one of the exchanges that Jesus has with the Pharisees, he says this to them. You know, you guys, you tithe on everything perfectly, meticulously. Even how much dill and spice you put in your food. But you've rejected mercy and sacrifice, the spirit of the law. Now, what most evangelical churches have done in America today is just bring you the spirit of the law without the letter. God loves you. That is true, right?
Yes.
God is love. That is true, right?
Yes.
But what letter of the law had to be carried out for God to demonstrate that? A man's life was the price to be paid.
There's no greater love than this.
No greater love than this. So there's value in the letter of the law. Did I say there was not?
No.
No. But if whenever we divorce the letter and spirit of something, we warp it. If you divorce the spirit from the letter, you'll just end up with a technocratic process. If you divorce the letter from the spirit, then you'll just end up with something that, or the spirit from the letter, you'll just end up with something that is empathetic to a fault. This is what Abigail Schreier is talking about right now, where empathy in and of itself is the value. And so therefore, nothing's ever said bad or wrong because I don't want to appear empathetic and judgy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this not where we are right now?
Exactly.
It's exactly where we are right now. And so Jesus says to them, you were right to tithe on the letter of the law. I'm God. I gave you that law. So I'm glad to see you follow it. But if you do so at the expense of the spirit of it, then it's just a rote mechanism. There's no heart to it. There's no soul to it. And you've reduced it. This is philosophical reductionism. You've reduced it to just a process. And if I can be a terrible person, reject what it is that it really means to love God, all my heart, soul, strength, and mind, but it's okay because I tithed on how much cumin or cumin I spent, and so therefore I'm good. No. You tithe on the cumin because you're willing to suffer and serve the Lord who suffers and serves you and suffered for you. It's a relationship. And there's a relationship between the spirit and the letter of the law. The letter of the law of this country is we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. Who is creating the government? The government? The people are. Who is the sovereign, the one who creates the entity or the created entity? Which one is sovereign?
The one who creates it.
Just like who created us? Are we sovereign,
it's
or
like
is the
we
one who created us?
Created in somebody's image or something.
Correct.
It's weird.
And so if the government is created, is formed in our image, who is the sovereign? The government? The documents the government creates, or is it the one who made the government, formed it. In its inmost being, one might even say, its conscience. The people are. There is no, therefore, argument that the substance and origin of law in the United States is to lead to a conclusion that a state has no ability, no standing, and no agency to defend itself from an invasion if the federal government that was given that jurisdiction refuses to do its job. What Sonia Sotomayor is trying, Sonia Sotomayor is making federalism arguments. When states said that they wanted to police abortion, did Sonia Sotomayor make federalism arguments? She did not.
No.
She did not. Which tells you, is Sonia Sotomayor really a caretaker, a meticulous caretaker of the philosophy of federalism? And that's why she's taking this position?
That's
no.
That's adorable.
Yeah, she's not. This is a lie. It's a scam. She is using our own legal process as a means by which to undo the law and introduce a new, warped, bizarro understanding of the origin and substance, therefore purpose, of the law itself. This is important to understand. When that occurs in our Declaration of Independence, that's what they accused King George of doing, violating the laws of nature and nature's God. Yeah, you can get Parliament to sign off on every one of your edicts, and the judiciary is under your guidance. So yeah, you can get them to give it the seal of approval of the law, but it ain't the law according to any of the legal philosophy books, the Blackstone books, the biblical books. Nothing we've read says that's actually what the law is, and we're going to go by that now. So we break these bonds. This is what was said at the Civil War. No, you don't get to own people anymore. And frankly, the only mistake we're making here is we didn't get to this point much sooner to stop it. No man can ever own another man made in the image of God. Can't happen. There's a higher law. At Nuremberg, there were several judges who said, well, we tried to save Jews. We followed the process and we ran out of loopholes. Well, we had to just hand them over because that was the law. But give me credit for the ones I saved. I'm the lesser of two evils. Even, they're like modern day Republicans. Even more Jews would have gone to the gas chambers without me. I'm the hero. Don't look at the ones that I signed off on going to the gas chambers. Count them up against the ones that I did not. As if there's a ledger. There's an amount of murder that you can create that you can counterbalance by those that you saved. Do you know what we did with all those judges at Nuremberg? We hung every damn one of them by their necks, killed them all, executed them. Why? Because there's a higher law. That's why Liam Neeson didn't star in an Oscar-winning movie about these judges at Nuremberg we hung. He starred in an Oscar-winning movie about Oscar Schindler, who, at the risk of his own life, saved as many as he could. It is different to save as many as you can at the risk of your own life, right?
Yes.
It's another to say, I'm going to save as many as I can without taking any risk. Now you're a culprit. Now you're an enabler. You're an accomplice to murder. And we hung you for that. Because there's a higher law. And the origin of law and the substance of law says the purpose of the law is to say it is wrong to murder people and therefore there should be punishment for it. That's what's being debated here. We are debating how many steps can I take on the Sabbath and still be obedient. Wrong. The purpose of the Sabbath was not, and this is how, by the way, how sinful can we be that God gave an ordinance for us to take a day off and we found a way to warp that and turn that into a chore and everything? I mean, human nature's bad. Bad. We wouldn't take yes for an answer from God. The purpose of the law is not to lead to an outcome where the people that have agency are the criminal invaders, but the people being invaded who are lawful citizens. If we get to a point that your process says the other, that's not a lawful process. That's no longer law. It should no longer be obeyed. And so this is now where the governor of Texas, like President Lincoln did once, the governor of Texas needs to understand he took an oath of office to be a great steward of Supreme Court precedent. Is that what he did? He took an oath of office to bow the knee to the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, no matter what they said. Is that the oath that he took?
He probably thinks it is.
Maybe he thinks so, but it's not. He took an oath and spoke the words that he would defend the Constitution of the United States and Texas against what? All enemies, both what, Todd?
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and?
Domestic.
Domestic. Do your job, sir. That is your job. That is the job the people of Texas entrusted you with. They are the sovereign people of Texas. It is what they voted for. They did not vote for any of the judges on the 5th Circuit Court of Appeals to say, you allow your children to be fentanyl receivers. You do nothing as human traffickers and drug mules parade across your lands. No. That is not the law. There's a higher law. And you swore an oath to it, sir. And that is your job. This is why I said yesterday, don't send any more trucker convoys to the border. Send them to Austin. Let me quote another famous Texan. Power is where power goes. Lyndon Johnson. Where's the power? Is it at the border or is it in Austin?
Austin.
It's in Austin. Go there. Do your job. This is your job. This is the law. Is it wrong to steal?
Yes.
Does the highest law say don't steal things that don't belong to you?
Yes.
Are the people of Texas being stolen from?
Every day.
Yes. Then which law should Greg Abbott uphold? The highest law or this warped, bizarro process that says arrest the woman in her own home? Give agency to the criminal aliens. What do you think the people who founded this country would say is the law? Hell, what do you think the people who once created a republic known as Texas, and it cost many of them their lives to do that, what do you think they would say? This isn't about the Supreme Court, and it's not about the Fifth Circuit Court. It's about the law. And it's about the law that Greg Abbott swore an oath to uphold. This is his time, his job. If he doesn't do it, it's not because the courts wouldn't let him. It's because he failed. He knew better and refused to uphold his oath. And now he's the baddie. Back here on the Steve Dace Show, hour two underway, along with Todd Erzin and Aaron McIntyre. I'm Steve Dace. Let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox. Steve@SteveDace.com is how you can email the show. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. Follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Getter, Instagram, and TikTok. And you can also, if you don't mind, leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. If you're a podcast listener, leave us a 5-star review there. And, or, hit subscribe, or if you're on iTunes, that's follow these days. And that way, every time we do a new episode, it will show up in your feed every single time. Thanks to all of you for doing that, too. Thanks for our friends at Jace Medical who have been there for so many of you with the Jace case. Make sure I think we've all learned a harsh lesson in these last 4 years of which entities can and cannot be trusted. Understand that much of the medical establishment takes the word of Scientific American as gospel. Didn't we have them yesterday inserting woke language into one of its recent studies on purpose? You just can't trust people with an agenda like that. So make sure you have a backup plan. Jace Medical is that plan. Get the Jace case, whether it's your existing medications or something you want to do for a loved one. They can customize it for you. JaceMedical.com so that you've got the peace of mind to know that if there's another so-called emergency, you're prepared for whatever they throw at you. JaceMedical.com. Enter the code DACE at checkout for a discount. J-A-S-E. J-A-S-E for JaceMedical.com. Quick little programming note. We are off the rest of the week for our spring break. We'll have, reruns, I think, Thursday and Friday. Monday, we will have a live show. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to be traveling back from an event in Florida. On Monday, I'll be in Florida. But Tuesday, I'll be traveling back from an event in Florida. So we're going to run our first evergreen of the year on Tuesday. And this year for Evergreens, we're doing a series of kind of Rogan-esque long-form conversations with people of various perspectives, particularly theological. So Pastor Greg Locke, the man behind Come Out in Jesus' Name, the movie that was out about this time last year, talking about deliverance ministry. Pastor Greg Locke is going to be our very first guest next week on our Evergreen next Tuesday. So we'll go very in-depth with him on this over the course of the program on Tuesday. I think you guys will find it to be a very fascinating conversation. So, and then we're back to regular order again a week from today on Wednesday. All right, with that, let's get to it. It is time for Buy, Sell, or Hold. Aaron has the submissions. You made said submissions. Todd, you and I are going to decide, are we going to buy that? Are we going to sell that? Right. If at any point in time, though, we use the hold, that is a violation of the dude code. It's a weak move. It's weak sauce. And as a result, you're going to have to figure out why it is that Lindsey Graham, as Aaron mentioned earlier, why it is that Lindsey Graham doesn't like to look women in the eye.
Nope. No holds.
No holds.
No holds.
All right. Aaron, let's go. No holds barred.
We'll begin with John, Exodus 14:14, who has this. Christy Noem dentist video on endless loop is the new punishment for holds.
That's bad.
That is pretty bad. Yeah. That's good. I'll buy. I like it.
Buy.
Yeah.
Jim James says, Scottie Scheffler will win two majors in 2024.
The dude's just really good, man. I mean, he is really good. I know, breaking news. Spoiler alert. He's just really good, and he's just unflappable, you know? So, but two is hard.
That's a pretty easy sell.
Yeah, so I'm going to sell. I mean, I could see him finish top five in all four majors, mm-hmm. but to win two, I'm going to sell. But I'd like to see it. He's also a very likable dude.
Adam says, top 10 male characters in 80s sitcoms. Remember, last week we had 90s sitcoms or 90s TV shows.
All right.
Number 10, Dr. Jason Seaver.
It's Alan Thicke. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. All right, yeah, okay. I'm by. Yeah.
Number 9, Danny Tanner.
Yeah.
8, Cliff Clavin.
Oh, yeah.
7, Judge Harry T. Stone.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
6, Kevin Arnold.
Yeah, these are good so far.
5, Tony Maselli.
Yeah.
4, Jack Tripper.
That's more of a 70s show, but it was technically on in the 80s, right? It lasted like 81, 82. Okay, so it'll count. It might be too high. His best days would have been in the... That's Three's Company, right? Yeah, his best days would have been in the 70s, but okay. I'm fine with him being on the list.
Number 3, Cliff Huxtable.
I guess if we can... It's hard to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess O.J. Simpson still has some records. We got to acknowledge those, right?
So, okay. Michael Jackson never sang a good song.
That's good point. I mean, this was like the highest rated show of the decade, so yeah. Okay.
Number 2, Alex P. Keaton.
That's my boy. Yep.
And number 1, Sam Malone.
That's a good number 1. That's a pretty good list.
Sure.
Could maybe come up with a few, but I can't say right away that there's somebody on that list that doesn't belong there.
Yep.
That's pretty good. Well done. Yeah. Bye.
Next, we go to Righteous Savages podcast. Dylan Mulvaney is a psyop to distract the right from what they need to focus on.
I think that he has... I don't think that that's his intent. I do think he is a psyop, but it is for normalization. It's a grooming psyop. I don't think it's with the intent of distracting the opposition for the spirit of the age. I think that we can turn it into that. But, you know, in defense of our industry and movement, I don't think you have to be a grifter to focus on this low-lying fruit all the time. Let me explain for just a second. I mean, what substance, outside of a few places like Florida, what substance on a daily basis is the Republican Party offering right-wing media to focus on and discuss? Like, where would we even come up with the substance most days? If we decided, I'm just not doing this low-lying fruit, chuckle hut, you know, right-wing stuff anymore, right? Like, you listen to Daniel's podcast. The level of, he's just not wired to do Dylan Mulvaney podcast anyway, okay? But you can just, the level of anger and frustration, and God bless him for it, on his podcast on a daily basis. You know, because he wants to focus on substance, and it's very rare that any is actually being offered. I mean, I don't think you've got to be a complete, total grifter to be like, man, I mean, this is really all there is to talk about, right? Like, I don't even know if a biblical worldview wasn't the prime directive of our show, I don't even know how we'd do on a daily basis. I don't even know that I could have lasted in this business. Like, I think I would have just lost it. I'd have gone, you know, what's that guy in network? Howard Beale. I'd have gone Howard Beale long ago. Just name names, settled accounts, blown myself up and lit myself on fire and make myself unplayable on every platform that matters. Okay? I mean, the biblical worldview focus keeps me sane and grounded because I've got a higher mission here that I'm trying to fulfill. Because on a daily basis, tell me where a lot of the substance you would, where's the substance you would cover on most of the political right? If you were looking for it, where would it be?
Is this a trick question?
Yeah, exactly. So you're only left with the Dylan Mulvaney kind of stuff.
Listen, I'm selling. I mean, his ridiculousness, his mental illness, his depravity, that's real. The Republican fecklessness is real. But the psyop, it's not just about them. I mean, everything is psyop these days because the puppet masters have realized we want to be experimented on. I mean, really, we're not citizens anymore. So we will see a story about a woman get arrested in her own home. Yeah, you got stuff to do. I it's way bigger. It's way worse than you think. It's way worse than you think.
Next, we go to Scott Schultz, who has a bottom 10 list. I'm really going to just make this a 9 list. Fruit of the spirit of the age. He says this comes from the tree of good intentions. Number 10 is It's Thursday. I don't really understand that. But
it's
maybe
a day of the week.
A day of the week, yeah. Okay. Number 9, control. 8, violence. 7, hubris. 6, evil. 5, niceness. 4, busyness. 3, unrest. 2, anger. And 1, hatred.
I don't think anger belongs on the list. Because I don't think there is a clear form of righteous anger for sure. I actually don't think violence belongs on the list because there's a period and point in time where violence is required. Otherwise, what do we do every July 4th here? I mean, we look like a bunch of hypocrites. Okay. I separated those two because it does seem like the rest of that list, there's never really much of a positive, application or connotation to. But overall, I'm okay with the list. I get where you're going. So I'll buy. I'd actually move hubris to number one. That's pride. That's original sin there. So I put hubris number one. But for the rest of it, other than the two quibbles I mentioned earlier, I don't think it's a bad list. I'll buy.
I'll sell. There's no comfort on there.
Oh,
yeah. That's a good point, too. Yeah. So let's take anger off, because we could use a little more anger in these parts. And put comfort there instead. Then would you buy?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Next up, we go to Double D 23, who says the stubborn, rule-breaking, line-crossing kids are the hardest to raise, but often turn into those narrow road-walking adults courageous enough to say no and push back against the world if those instincts are nurtured correctly by parents.
I think that this is true more times than not. I will buy. And you see this when you're raising, when you raise daughters and then raise a son, you truly see this. You just see the differences, the instinctive differences between the two. And you know, there was something in Noah from the very beginning. And you look at pictures of the little dude, he's got these chubby little cheeks. He's so cute. All right, but from the very beginning, there was a look in his eyes that Anastasia and Zoe did not have. All right? He was looking for an edge from the beginning. And I wanted to make sure, you know, as I was enforcing discipline in the home, that I didn't take that edge completely away, because that's what's going to make him the man that God called him to be later on. Not saying, I mean, there's unique challenges raising girls too, you know, but that there, Noah, as soon as Noah became aware, there was just a look in his eye, despite the chubby cheeks and the cuteness, there was a look in his eye that his sisters just never had. He's just wired differently, you know, and that's how he was made. And that kind of look in his eye that at times you're like, what are you up to? That's the stuff that, you know, later on turns him into a cop, a soldier, a statesman, a world changer. It's that same look in the eye. Yep. So that's our job as parents, is to channel that, nurture that, and then let it out when the time is right.
I agree with everything Steve said, but I will sell on the overall premise only because you could take whatever attitude is in the first part of that. You had strong-willed, obstinate, I'm paraphrasing, but you could put passive, lazy, you could be any number of things. The latter part needs to be operative with those kids. They are sinners, but they are also created in the image of likeness of God. All of them, no matter what. Your job as parents is to figure that out accordingly. There's even within the male side of things, there's a pretty broad spectrum of the way things are going to go. And on the female side of things, having four daughters, they ain't all the same, that's for sure. But I have my closed hand and I have my open hand that allows for their unique individuality. But you don't. I'm just saying it's broader than in terms of the kind of child you talk to. There isn't one child with a certain group of beliefs, attitudes that is just so inherently broken that you can't do anything with them. Your job as a parent is to figure it out.
Folks, living with pain, that's well said. Living with pain is no fun, especially if it's the kind that keeps coming back all the time. And sometimes it feels like nothing will make it go away. You take drugs for a while to kind of help you mask that pain. And they can work for sure, but they can also create symptoms that you don't want later on. What if there was a drug-free way to maybe get rid of the pain? And that's what Relief Factor aims to do. It's not a panacea. It's not a cure. They don't guarantee 100% results. But over the years, this supplement has been taken by about 1 million people. And it was created by physicians who can prescribe drugs who wanted to go after the inflammation causing your chronic pain. And of those 1 million-plus people that have tried the 3-week quick start, 70% saw such great results in 3 weeks or less that they stuck around long term. So it's just $20. All right, that's all it is. Even in the Biden economy, I think we can afford $20 to see if we don't see a difference in our pain and quality of life, therefore, in 3 weeks or less. If you want to try it today at relieffactor.com. Once again, head over to relieffactor.com.
Next, we will go to Daniel Garrett. Within 5 years, university athletic programs will start hiring the NFL equivalent of general managers to negotiate NIL deals with its athletes.
Oh, that's already happening. Yeah, the school's already. Yeah. Michigan just hired one. Lots of schools are going to do this all over the place. Schools were even. Vanderbilt hired away the director of scouting for one of the big recruiting networks several years ago when the transfer portal came in, because they just couldn't, you can't keep up with all the high school recruits and all the guys in the transfer portal. So yes, general managers are already becoming a staple of collegiate programs. So I'll buy. It's happening now.
And the Caden Proctor story, proving it's all going great, guys. Just
is it true
perfect.
That the kid took six figures from Iowa, or is that just message board?
So not lore. Six figures, but he did take something.
And of course,
so if you're not familiar with this story, Caden Proctor is a local kid here from Southeast Polk, which is a major 4A. It's the highest level of school athletically in the state. Five-star recruit, rare for Iowa. It is rare to have a five-star recruit from Iowa. Originally out of high school, he committed to Iowa. Then at the last minute, like days before signing day, he flipped his commitment to Alabama. Played last season for Alabama. After Nick Saban left, he entered the transfer portal, came back to Iowa. He was at Iowa for 2 months, and then just yesterday announced he's heading back to Alabama once again. And he can play this season.
After he took the money from Iowa.
A little bit. Yeah. That's what I'm told.
And now they're parsing you to say, fans, they're not taking from you. They're taking from the part
corporated,
of it.
Yeah.
The corporations that are paying and where you do tit for tat. I mean, guys. Going great. Yeah. Just like I told you. Just awesome.
Next, we go to Charles Martel. The country Israel isn't the real Israel. See Romans 9. Todd, your thoughts.
I still haven't moved on from Caden Proctor. Read it again.
The country Israel isn't the real country, or isn't the real Israel.
Okay, it's just as stupid as I thought the first time. I don't. What are we doing?
I think he means that it's not. I think he's saying that the original Israel's mission was created or was completed by ushering Messiah into the world. And so there, therefore, is no prophetic significance in this particular Israel. It's just a country we have some common values with and have a strategic partnership with. In and of itself, it's not of any prophetic importance. That Israel's era is over. That's what he's
saying.
You're
being very generous. I sensed something akin to malice in the way that was phrased. So you're being generous. I agree with what you said,
yeah.
But I don't. I got a vibe from the way it was
put.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a vibe to it for sure. I'll tell you this. Even if you agree with Mr. Martel's eschatological view of Israel, it certainly doesn't seem like the spirit of the ages forces around the world believe there's no prophetic right. significance to this Israel, right?
Yeah, that's.
I mean, the enemy had all of his Islamist countries invade Israel May 16th, 1948, the day after the country was formed. I understand your theological position. I've studied it. I can see why people have that position. And when we get to Romans 9, I look forward to all the people we'll alienate by even entertaining this discussion. Okay. But that being said, it's a little bit like my position on cessationism, the idea that the gifts of the Spirit went out with the apostles. There's no scripture that says this. It just doesn't. I don't think there's even any scripture that implies it. So I'm not a cessationist. But I actually agree with many of the criticisms of charismatics that cessationists have, because a lot of it, frankly, is just foolishness and silliness. And it's just babbling and fake prophecies and fake healings. It's a miracle. Benny Hinn can heal you on your fourth offering at his arena. Yet he can't just walk through any childhood AIDS ward and just put his hands on people and heal them there for no money. It's a miracle. The gift of the Spirit only comes with an offering, right? Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a scam, guys. Okay? So I don't believe in cessationism, but I think a lot of the criticisms of cessationists are actually accurate. Similarly, I understand why someone has this eschatological view. There are many great Christian thinkers throughout history who actually shared this view. And it's a somewhat relatively new concept within Christianity to have the prophetic view of this Israel. Okay. That being said, even if you have that view, you must admit to yourself, the enemy does not treat this iteration of Israel as if it's just a nation on a map. Okay. That's another secular left-wing nation, just like all the rest of them. Does he tend to treat this Israel like that?
It seems not.
It seems not. So he at least seems to think it has something to say, because he targets it quite a bit. I have to admit that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Next.
Next, we will go to Room for Gray, who has this. Terminator Genesis was completely underrated, super creative, and belongs in what should have been a trilogy, being 1, 2, and Genesis.
Is this the one that Christian Bale's in? It's been so long, I can't keep them all.
I haven't seen any of the Terminator movies.
You haven't seen any of them?
No.
Terminator 2 is a friggin' classic, man. But it's been so long since I've seen this movie, I gotta sell. I think it's the one that they tried to reboot the franchise with Christian Bale, but I can't remember.
Yeah, no idea.
And the fact that I can't remember means it shouldn't have been a trilogy, so also. If it was worthy of being a trilogy, I would have remembered.
Next, we go to E. Nicolix, who says, every time Steve yells, look at the polls, somewhere, Lindsey Graham's leg tingles.
I'm going to sell because I need the, I need that to not be true. Yeah. I will tell you guys, I don't know what it says to. I have had several women tell me, send me emails telling me they love when I scream, look at the polls. They love it. I don't know what that means.
Let's not dig any further.
Let's not even contemplate or speculate. Okay, let's just let that kind of dangle out there on its own and move on.
Exactly.
I agree. Yeah.
Next, we go to @swimandspincos, who says March Madness should add multi-game series starting in the Elite Eight.
Sell. What is? I'm gonna sell right now. The whole
Elite
point
is best of three, Final Four, best of five, national championship, best of seven.
No, the whole point of the thing is the single elimination randomness of it, the one shining moment. You just went Sonia Sotomayor. You undid the complete schema of the tournament. Why it exists in the first place? Why it's great in the first place? Sell, and selling with prejudice. Don't ever come back with another suggestion. That's how bad that one was. Sell with prejudice.
You don't want to rewrite the song for like three shining moments or five shining yes. moments or seven.
Four out of seven. No, don't do that.
I can only hope he knew this would trigger us.
Yes,
this is why he wrote it.
If it's a troll, it's masterful, and I take it all back. Okay,
because I think you were just talking off air about the game last night.
The Virginia took 51 minutes in between baskets.
I don't even recognize those as real games. Those are not NCAA tournament games. If somehow a team who wins...
Catholic is here to bring you the word on tradition. Listen, children.
There are 64 teams.
That's right.
That's it. And even if one of these teams runs all the way through and wins... One of these teams actually made the Final Four one year, didn't they?
Two of them did. George Mason did it once, and VCU did it once. Yeah.
If they went on to win it, they wouldn't be
It's an illegitimate title.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, and I would say
I respect that.
I don't care if they were playing Duke. I'd be rooting for Duke so hard against a Cinderella. And no.
Whoa. Hello. That's a statement. There you go. I'd even root for Duke.
It's true.
All right. We go on to Philip Couch. Seeds 1 through 4. So these are the seed lines. The team with the best chance of winning the national championship from each of these seed lines. The one seed line, Purdue. The 2 seed line, Tennessee. The 3 seed line, Creighton. And the 4 seed line, Auburn.
I'll sell on all of it.
I think 3 of them are not bad takes. I certainly think Purdue's road is way easier than any of the other number one seeds. Tennessee has got to show under Rick Barnes that, I mean, it is a perennial March flameout. Also, Tennessee lost its first game in its conference tournament. Aaron, since seeding began in 1979, how many times has a team that won, that lost its first game in its conference tournament, won the national championship?
Zero.
Never happened. So, Tennessee, you're out. But the rest of that list I don't think is bad, so I'll buy.
I sold all of it.
Next, we go to... Why are you selling all of that? You just disagree with the teams?
The selection show was on immediately after the Badgers played, so like I would never even... I haven't filled out a bracket in over a decade, so I don't...
That's right, I forgot.
But I did happen to see it this year, and based on the recollection I have of the other team, I'm just not... Like, I think... Illinois, I think, is a 3.
Illinois is a 3.
I view them more compelling than Creighton. I can't even remember a 4, but whoever the 4 was there...
Auburn.
Yeah, I...
Auburn's the team I'm gambling my entire bracket on. Because there's nothing to be gained by picking
Yale beating Auburn.
Yep.
And Morehead State beating Illinois.
But Auburn's metrics are almost exactly what UConn's are. So I'm going with Auburn just to be different from the crowd and see if I turn out to be right. If I am, I'm going to finish in like the 99th percentile on ESPN.com. If not, I'm going to finish a lot lower than that.
Next, we go to Michael Bennett. $50 trillion in debt is our fail-safe line. Once we hit that, it's over.
Sell. The fail-safe line is not a number. The fail-safe line is when does the rest of the world that could act in opposition to us decide that we have demonstrated enough feebleness and weakness as a country that they will now act? And I don't know what that number is. It might be next week. It might be never. But I don't think it's a definitive number.
I'm selling because, let's go 20 years ago, then the exact same tweet, before Twitter even existed, but you would have written something, the fail-safe line, and the number would have been so much
like
smaller.
Like 10 trillion.
Yeah, so much smaller.
Yeah.
But we blasted past that one, didn't we? No.
The fail-safe line was the gold standard and getting rid of it. That was the fail. It was always going to end up here.
All right, before we move on, don't forget about our friends at Patriot Mobile. They are building the parallel economy that we need because we're taking questions like, is $50 trillion in debt the fail-safe line? All right, and you also get a fantastic product because that's the most important thing. We use it in our house. Their customer service team has been first rate. No complaints. That's why I'm happy to rave about Patriot Mobile to you. Make the switch today. When you do, you'll get an outstanding customer service team, like I just said. You'll get lots of flexibility at any time you want once you're a member. If you got to switch to a different network within their network, they'll let you do that because somewhere else maybe has a better signal. They'll let you do that free of charge anytime. They customize it so that you can keep your number, change your number, keep your phone, upgrade your phone, whatever you want to do. They make it happen for you at Patriot Mobile. So go to patriotmobile.com today to make the switch. That's patriotmobile.com today. Use the offer code Steve to get a free activation if you do. PatriotMobile.com/Steve. Use the offer code Steve at PatriotMobile.com/Steve. Offer code Steve.
Next, we go to Blue Ridge Joe. I'm going to alter this a little bit. We should replace revival and bust with survival and trust.
It's not a bad saying. I mean, if I'd come up with survival and trust, I would have done that. But I came up with revival or bust, so I'm going to stick with it, but I don't think it's bad.
I think we nailed it the first time.
Okay.
Next, we go to Courtney D. Everything is in place for the Bible prophecy concerning the Gog-Magog war from Ezekiel to take place.
So this is where the consortium of nations like Russia and, is it Iran?
Yes.
I think it's Iran. Russia and Iran essentially invade Israel. And here's the thing I'm going to sell on this, because not even within dispensational circles do they even agree on this stuff. I mean, there's disagreements. There's pre-tribs, there's post-tribs, there's mid-tribs. There's disagreements even within dispensational eschatology on this stuff. So I'm going to sell.
I'm selling too. We're at the point in Scripture where the Pope tells you you're committing suicide if you don't get vaccinated. That's where we are.
You are committing suicide if you do not risk committing suicide by taking a poison.
So saith the Psalms.
Yes.
Next, we go to Adam. The abortion abolitionist versus pro-life debate will be the greatest mover of the Overton window on the right if it proves successful.
I agree, because you're dealing with the largest block of voters on the right. I agree with that, if it's successful. I agree.
The last part is an important caveat, but yeah, bye.
Yep.
Skipping ahead here, because we're not doing any on overtime. We're going to go to Andy in Florida, who says there will not be any significant advances or breakthroughs in mobile computing hardware in the next 15 years. Cell phones, tablets, laptop computers in 2040 will be, for the most part, indistinguishable from today's devices.
Sell. I think everything's going to go virtual, immersive, as the spirit of the age tries to... the spirit of the age is spinning it's an alternative creation.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sell.
As Dennis Miller once said, it's going to make crack look like Sanka.
Correct.
Finally, really quick, Sheepdog says, if Steve is going to eat up giant portions of buy, sell, or hold time with stories of dismembering prostitutes, that time should be added to the overtime so as to allow for all of Aaron's selections to be read.
When did I ever do this?
Like last week.
How did that even come up?
It was the Old Testament.
Oh, the Judges story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's scripture. No. No, I sell. You're wrong. Heretic. Paint Your Life is back here on the show. You wanted to get something really special for each of your parents on their special days, Mother's Day, Father's Day coming up here this spring and summer. You discovered you could have a portrait or one of their favorite memories hand-painted by Paint Your Life. Perfect. What photos did you use? Did you use the compilation service? Why did you choose those photos? What was the order process like? Were you excited when you saw the portrait progress? How did you feel when you saw the portrait for the first time? I got to tell you, I went through this for my mom a few years ago, and I took the earliest picture I have of the two of us. And they did absolutely incredible work. I'd answer each of those questions with the most rave review I possibly could. And I know as we get older, you're like, okay, I mean, it feels like, haven't I bought everything? I don't want to do something duplicate. I don't want to do something that makes it feel like I didn't put any thought or anything into it. This is one of the greatest, most unique gifts you could ever get. A professional hand-painted portrait created from any photo you have at a truly affordable price. Lots of options. You can have the choice of artist, art medium. Do you want watercolors, charcoal, acrylic? That's what that means. A great selection of quality frames, too. User-friendly platform that lets you order a custom-made hand-painted portrait in less than 5 minutes. It's the perfect birthday, anniversary, Mother's Day, Father's Day gift. All right. You can give the most meaningful gift you've ever given at paintyourlife.com, and there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded, guaranteed. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping. That's a big deal when you're talking about these massive portraits. So you can see there if you're watching on Blaze TV. That's the one they did for my mom for Christmas several years ago. It's just incredible. Incredible work. All right. To get this special offer, text the word DACE to 87204. Text DACE to 87204. Text DACE, D-E-A-C-E, to 87204. Paint your life. Celebrating the moments that matter the most. Let's bring in our good friend Daniel Horowitz here, and good to see you, my friend. And we discussed in depth at the top of the show that what's really being debated right now is not this law in Texas or illegal process or jurisdiction, but really what is the substance, origin, and purpose of the law. If we end up in a place where the conclusion of your legal process is criminals have agency and standing and the law-abiding citizen does not, your process is null and void and is lawless and should not be followed, and the governor should act. I know that you agree with that. So let's talk about a second stage of this. One of the things that was successful in the overturning of Roe is it wasn't just a Mississippi heartbeat bill, or it was actually a 15-week bill, but there were numerous states that gathered together right around that time, 2017, 2018, 2019, that did either heartbeat bills or 15-week bills. That critical mass kind of forced the Supreme Court's hand, basically gave it the political cover to overturn Roe. And I'm thinking that's what needs to happen now. In light of what the Supreme Court did yesterday, notwithstanding what the Fifth Circuit is trying to do now, but the Supreme Court at least gave some form of cover to what Texas is trying to do. I think every red state governor, red state legislature, special sessions ought to be called right now to help to build that critical mass to say to the Supreme Court, we want that to be the permanent ruling. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, this is the formula laid out in Federalist 46 by Madison, that you have a bunch of states, starting with a big state, he mentions, where the governor, the state courts, the legislature, the disquietude of the people all get together and say, this will not stand. This is illegitimate. You lay out the legal case, the political case, the moral case. And, you know, I've had this debate for years. As you well know, my first book, Stolen Sovereignty, was about judicial supremacism, particularly over stolen sovereignty, this issue, because I warned they were going to create a right to immigrate. And what I would tell people is Republican judges are no different than Republican politicians, in that if we had the entire conservative industry on Greg Abbott's case, on Kristi Noem's case, on Henry McMaster's case, heck, on Donald Trump's case, you'd get better results. Mm-hmm. Because they don't really want to do what's right, but they don't want to really be caught on the wrong side of conservative media. And this is really the only advantage to the Republican part of the uniparty over the Democrat party is, to varying degrees, they are subject to pressure. So therefore, that's like the one thing we don't exert. But that is the one benefit. You know, all the people like, oh, no, of all costs, we got to get a Republican over a Democrat. Well, they're right in one way, but they don't use it, and that's to exert pressure. And Republican judges are no different. They don't sit in some, you know, soundproof room where they can't be seen or heard. I mean, they don't talk publicly, politically as much, or sometimes at all. But believe me, Barrett and Kavanaugh have been seeing what we have been putting out. Like a lot of us have been putting out, that pointing out to the hypocrisy of how they allow lower bed court rulings to stand without granting conservative appeals. But then when the shoe's on the other foot, they've screwed with the Fifth Circuit like a dozen times already on things from chemical abortion, tranny stuff. And we already saw with the border barriers, the Constantino Wire case. Okay, so they're subject to that sort of pressure. And I think we saw that yesterday. Now, just so you know, it was extremely subversive what they did, because they didn't want to be perceived as pointing the gun at the Fifth Circuit. So they loaded the gun and said to the Fifth Circuit, you better do it yourself. That's what Barrett basically wrote. And that's why within hours they responded accordingly. Hey, you know, that temporary administrative stay, are we sure that's temporary? Because we wouldn't want it to go away, would we? That's what Barrett wrote. It's extremely subversive. And she's reprehensible. But nonetheless, as you're saying, they are subject to pressure. There's a difference between one state acting like a thief in the middle of the night. Hey, like, okay, I really want to do this, but only if the courts agree, versus 20 governors getting together, having special sessions. This will not pass. You give the legal case, the moral case, the political case, and we are not doing this. And they will back off. That's the thing about judicial supremacism. It's a house of cards. They only screw with the red states because they know they're screwable. They have no force nor will. Now, you need multiple states to really do this to get off the ground. But I'll give you a great example, because the left does this all the time. I mean, that's why Chuck Schumer laid down that marker and pressured the justices, because he knows it works. COVID is a great example. Even some of the Democrat judges, there's no way they would tell you that a state has the power to put on a travel ban to other Americans, right? Remember that? Mm-hmm. I mean, Greg Abbott sent out state troopers to the Louisiana border and put up checkpoints. It's funny, you can't do that for foreign invaders, and that's part of the argument they need to make public health. There's a lot of information out on them bringing in diseases out, you know, malaria, measles, all this stuff. Okay, that's a separate argument, but that is an argument they need to make. But here's the deal. Do you think that was going to stop the states from doing COVID? The people were clamoring for it. For better, for worse, the people rule. And the people wanted that. The courts knew that the public was in no mood for, oh, you can't do anything to save our lives from coronavirus. They knew that, and they backed off. And there it was for the worse. But here we could do it for the better. Because if we don't do this, Steve, I'm just going to tell you. Let's say, but the polls, which the polls are kind of changing, but Trump wins. And let's say somehow he gets competent people around him, and they write good executive orders. Because you're going to have to do that. You're never going to have the votes to pass anything out of Congress. And also, you can't have a government shutdown. We already know that. So you're going to have to do this stuff executively. Now, what happened during Trump's first term every time he tried to do something on the border?
We were introduced to the term universal injunction, where one federal judge could just issue universal injunctions and make the world stopped on their one whim. We were introduced to this phrase, yes.
So if this marker is not laid down, we're done. Like, I'm just going to tell you, with birthright citizenship, okay, you will not have a single district or appellate court that's going to uphold that. And at best, you'll get 2-7 in the Supreme Court. It's abhorrent legally. It's wrong. But I'm just telling you, politically, in a static analysis, if you don't build the political case, it's all political. What's his name? Posner, that old bull that used to be on the Seventh Circuit. He wrote in his book that with gay marriage, they waited for the right time. It was a push-pull. They waited until politically they moved the needle enough to go and suddenly discover that in 1867, the framers of the 14th Amendment, felt that sodomy is king. And, you're going to criminalize a state for not doing that, something that they probably would have criminalized you for doing, or did criminalize you for doing. So the point is, politics rules the day. Barrett and Kavanaugh do not want to side with our outcomes, but they obviously don't want to be suitored either. Okay, they don't want that reputation. And we need to rip that Band-Aid off. And this is why every other state needs to do this. But the problem is you have all these Republican governors now out there. This is their new shtick. They're engaging in photo ops and sending National Guard. If the guardsmen are not going to push them back over the border, it means nothing. All you're doing is facilitating catch and release. If they were to demagnetize their states, and DeSantis is building towards that, he's increasing the penalties for being caught being there illegally. He signed three more bills, and he even said that. See, he's not a border state. If he were in Texas, he would push them back. That's part of the problem that we don't have him there. One state alone, there's complications downright deporting because, you know, you just don't have the resources and ability to deal with the other countries. But if you had a group of states building towards that, you'd get there. And I just want to end with one. I'll end my filibuster with one more thing. Justice Robert Jackson, he was the lead judge at Nuremberg, and he was also the main dissent in Korematsu. So he kind of understood a thing or two about due process. And he is the one, you know, a lot of people say the Constitution is not a suicide pact. Where did that line originate from? That adage came from a 1949 case, an opinion, a dissent, but then eventually it actually became a majority opinion a couple years later, about taking away First Amendment rights from a guy who is an anarchist who is inciting riots. Now, that's bare bones First Amendment of an American citizen, but he felt that if you don't temper the doctrine of, you know, I'm just paraphrasing here, of the raw legalities with just the broad outcomes, kind of what Lincoln's attorney general said with the habeas corpus suspension, you know, in the state of Maryland, it's like, well, I can't have the Confederate states just violate every damn thing and I'm powerless to do anything about it. If you don't temper it with that, you run the risk of losing the entire Constitution. Now, they said that in a case where the Constitution is not a suicide pact. This is judicial supremacism not being a suicide pact, because as we well know, the Compact Clause explicitly empowers a state to repel an invasion. So it's not even, you don't even have to come on to that. But alas, Steve, Republicans are funding this all today with no riders. Oh, actually, no, there is a rider. Another 12,000 Afghan visas.
I don't have anything to ask after that. I mean, that was a tour de force. I think I'm supposed to say thank you, but I hated almost all of that. But I appreciate it nevertheless, Daniel. Thank you.
Thank you. At least you got autumn.
That's more than a consolation prize, my friend. You're correct. Thank you.
God bless. Take care.
Take care. Daniel, brought to you by our friends at Miracle Made. You know, I love these sheets. We brought them on last year, and I put them to the test during one of the hottest summers in Iowa we've had in recent memory. It's the first summer ever I did not have to supplement the central air in our bedroom with the ceiling fan. Phenomenal silver-infused fabrics that help with your regulate your body temperature at night. So I thought, what about winter? Right. We then also had one of the coldest Januaries in Iowa history. Perfect. I mean, these sheets are phenomenal, and they're also very comfy. That's the most important thing, too. So are they comfortable or are they effective? Yes, they are both. And that's why you want to go to trymiracle.com/dace to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo code DACE at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund, but you're going to be 100% satisfied. So update your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/dace and use the code DACE for that special offer today. trymiracle.com/dace. Use the code DACE at trymiracle.com/dace. All right, gentlemen, final thoughts on what you heard from Daniel or anything else involving today's show?
Remember that whole thing a few months back about women realizing that men, how many men actually think about the Roman Empire?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got my own version of that. It's like, and Daniel, this is what came to mind when Daniel was speaking. Do you know, objectively speaking, how much less, in terms of usurpations, we went to war against the British for? than are currently.
Oh, I mean, go read the
flooding.
Is it 28 grievances or something like that? Go read the itemizations of those, and they're going to seem trite by our standards today. I know.
That's my Roman Empire. I think about that every day.
Yeah. Aaron?
March Madness starts tomorrow. That's what I got. I just...
That's as good a take as any, frankly, given our situation.
The number of times that you've said, what are we doing here, throughout your career, Steve, is that maybe the phrase you've uttered the most? You've had a lot of phrases you've uttered, but that comes to mind. The lack of political capital, or the lack of, I don't know, political capitalization, the rate of political capitalization versus the lack or the rate of political will, that ratio is way off. The photo ops versus actions are way off and have been my entire adult life. This is just the latest example. It just so happens it has to deal with the sovereignty of our country. You know, that's kind of a little issue, isn't it?
Yeah. It's ultimately why there's never a critical mass. The reason why, when you look at the long train of abuses that's itemized in the declaration, and it seems trite compared to what we are facing today, it's because as a people, we are trite compared to the kinds of people they were. Right? And as a result, I don't even know what it would take to generate a critical mass within our society where people just rise up and say, nope, not anymore, not happening. I don't even know that it's possible or achievable. Minus straight up economic implosion, calamity, zombie apocalypse, stuff of Ron Paul book level stuff. It just may not be possible.
I think you're right.
We'll see you guys again on Monday after our spring break. Until then, Romans 8:28.